Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac Dover. Today's guest, Captain Mark Kelly, who you may know from space, but you probably know as the husband of former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords and the leader of Americans for Responsible Solutions. Kelly happened to be in Washington when the news of the Las Vegas shooting broke. He was here to campaign in Virginia for Ralph Northam, the Democratic candidate for governor. And instead of doing that event, he and Giffords showed up at the Capitol on Monday morning and talked about what they want to see happen. But as is the case with every one of these mass shootings, it's not really clear what will happen. I had the opportunity to sit down with Kelly at the end of what was a very long week for him, talking about this issue, thinking about this issue in the wake of Vegas, and seeing movement in Congress on bump stock, which he thinks actually starts taking apart the argument that people who are opposed to new gun safety laws have, which is, he says, well, if you're passing a law for something, then it makes sense that you would think that a law could matter for more things when it comes to guns. Then, he's an astronaut. We got into the question of space. And of course, remember to subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Great guests coming up. Eric Holder, Nancy Pelosi, a really interesting conversation with her at this moment where she is at a crossroads of her career and of Democratic politics and congressional interface with the White House. That's all coming up. And now, my conversation with Mark Kelly. You've obviously been through a shooting. You know what this is firsthand. So I wonder what it is when you hear the news of another shooting. How'd you hear about what happened in Las Vegas?
Well, I looked at my phone like I always do. The first thing I do when I wake up, right, usually before I want to wake up, and I think like a lot of us, and I looked and I saw the CNN breaking news, but I think it was first reported there were two people dead.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to that, you know, when you run an organization like Gabby and I do, and we focus on this issue day in and day out, and we see these mass shootings that happen, you know, on a very regular basis, didn't seem like anything to me. I mean, it's like, you know,
right, you're watching
yeah, it's
shooting,
like, yeah,
all the time.
It happens all the time. Right. Now, when that number jumped to 50 plus, you know, my reaction, I guess one of the first things I thought about was a few years ago, I was out there meeting with some folks, you know, that are in advocacy and represent some influential people in Las Vegas. And I talked to them specifically about, hey, what's going to happen to Vegas when you have a mass shooting on the Strip? You know, it is not going to be good for the economy, for the city. And, you know, it just comes to pass. And, you know, when we don't do anything to fix a problem, I mean, we'll eventually see there'll be, you know, every city will be in Aurora, an Orlando, a Tucson, a Vegas. I mean, we'll be able to say that about every city.
And does it, you know, obviously your wife was shot. Do you, it must personalize that all these stories that we see, as with after every mass shooting, on television, newspapers, you see like, okay, well, this is the tale of this person and that person and how they come together. Does it hit you differently?
You know, I was talking to somebody in Vegas 10 minutes ago before we started talking here, and I was talking about going over to the hospital because, you know, I think it's important for people that find themselves in the same situation that I'm in to talk to somebody that's gone through this. So I specifically said, and I don't know if it's going to work out, but I'm supposed to be in Vegas next week. And I was talking about going to the hospital to maybe meet with some of the folks, if they're there, who are in the ICU with a traumatic brain injury, like Gabby's. I'm not so sure there are any patients in the ICU like that. And one of the reasons is the kind of round, you know, the 223 round in an AR-15 is moving. Now, it was a long range, so slowed down by then, but in general, moving at very high velocity, designed to tumble, and it's larger. So I'm not so sure those patients are there. But, you know, when I, if I was to meet these people, yeah, I mean, I understand the situation they're in, you know, how this is going to affect them, their family member who's injured, the friends that are around them, extended family members, how this is going to affect them for the rest of their lives. There will be a lot of these patients, a lot of the, you know, the victims of this shooting that will never fully recover from this thing. They will live with it for the rest of their lives.
And their family members.
And their family members will.
The number 59, I think we're at right now. But and then it's 500 or so.
Yeah, I think 300 or so have been released from the hospital already. But some of those might even be people that'll have injuries that will never go away. Even some of those that have been released.
And then if you think about the family and the friends and all the people who'll be connected to this and affected by it, it's thousands of people.
It's thousands, and then, thousands of people. And think about the cost.
Right.
You know, not a huge cost associated with people that were murdered. I mean, that's horrific. When you talk about the cost for some of these injuries to deal with this over a lifetime, I think somebody estimated just in our country every single year the cost of gun violence because of injuries to people is in excess of $2 billion. It's a significant cost. It's something that just on the cost side of this we should address.
You're making an economic argument for gun control.
Right? Absolutely. I mean, we can make a lot of different arguments. Let me first say we don't like the control word. You know, I'm a gun owner. I own 6 or 7 guns. I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I think it's 7.
Why do you own guns?
Why? Well, my first gun I got when I was in the Navy as a gift from my father. When you fly in combat in the United States Navy, we don't have the best sidearms. We knew that. I told my dad that. He bought me a gun that I flew in combat with. I've had for my entire adult life. Other guns I bought for, target shooting, for hunting.
Do you hunt?
Yeah, not as much as I am. I'm really busy, not as much as I would like. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something I do probably once a year. So occasionally. Usually bird hunting. Usually, in Texas, mostly. It's something I enjoy doing occasionally. So I own guns for that. And, a couple times I bought, specific weapons just because I liked them.
Do you have any automatic weapons?
No.
And that was true. It seems like that's...
And to clarify, I don't have any semi-automatic rifles, I think is what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was... You were in that position before Gabby got shot, that you didn't think that was something that you needed to buy, right?
No, not generally. I mean, I have a hunting rifle and a shotgun.
I wonder if you can talk a little bit about... talking about your own processing on this reaction to it. For Gabby, it must also be a strange and emotional thing to see that this keeps happening and to watch you shooting. Can you talk a little bit about how she... reacts to it when she sees the news?
Well, Gabby served in Congress for 2+ terms. She's a problem solver. She loved her job as a member of Congress. She's somebody who really believes, and I think rightfully in the right place and time, that there are legislative solutions to problems. And I think as a member of Congress, former member of Congress, she's frustrated that more of her colleagues don't see this. For years now, we've had a lot of members of Congress, mostly Republicans, that have believed and also have said that there are not solutions to this. They say that criminals don't follow the law, so what's the point in passing, more restrictive gun laws? By that logic, we wouldn't have any laws to make anything criminal activity, right? We would have no laws against, murder or assault. And if we didn't, I can pretty much guarantee you that there would not be a lot more murders in this country if they were not illegal, right? I mean, I think everybody could accept that. It's the same for gun violence. So she gets frustrated, that Congress, the body that she served in and that she loves cannot do the right thing because of how they're influenced from a very powerful and financially strong corporate interests. So that, it frustrates her. But, Gabby's an incredibly optimistic person, and she
Which
knows.
Which is amazing given what she went through,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't, you know, if I went through what she went through, I think, you know, most people, if they went through what she went through, they would not be the eternal optimist that she is. But she's all about, hey, moving ahead, and we can fix this, and we just got to figure out, you know, a new way.
Does she, has she met with any of the victims? Does she do any of that stuff, or that's not?
Well, she has in the past.
Right. That, no, obviously not in Vegas,
yeah,
but in the
yeah,
past.
Yeah.
Because I would imagine having survived all this, it's a different experience than you had surviving it, but also, like, surviving.
Yeah, we happen to see a lot of people from, you know, that have survived,
sure,
you know, whether it's a mass shooting or just your daily kind of gun violence. All different kinds of examples, all over the country, all the time. I think the last, you know, last time we actually went to a hospital, it wasn't for a mass shooting. It was up in Boston after the Boston mm-hmm. bombing, and we went to the rehab hospital where a lot of, you know, folks are going through rehab for their injuries.
Right.
I just recall, you know, I mean, we see a lot of people that have, you know, suffered from gun violence.
There was you happened to be in Washington on Monday, as the news of the shooting was continuing to unfold, and you guys went to the Capitol, and there was that moment where she, you spoke most of the time, and then she spoke for just a moment and turned to the Capitol and said, "Your country is counting on you." I think that's maybe your nation is counting on you.
Yeah.
Your nation is counting on you. Raised her arm, and then you guys were back later in the week, standing with some of her former colleagues. That, I mean, that has to be both difficult for her to have that frustration, but also to be with her former colleagues and to be that inspiration to so many of them to do something.
Well, I would say standing with her former colleagues on the Capitol steps is not difficult for her. I mean, she loves that kind of stuff, right? I mean, she loved the job. You know, unfortunately, she had to resign from the job,
sure,
but she enjoys being, you know, around them, both Democrats and Republicans. In this case, it was, you know, her caucus, I think, mostly. I wasn't there. But for us to go out and give a speech to the press in front of the U.S. Capitol, first time I've ever done that, we thought it was important to do. We thought it was important to, you know, put the stake in the ground here to say, hey, if not now, when?
Right.
You know, we knew what was going to happen. I mean, I hear it all the time. I used to say it myself. You know, now's not the time. There'll be the appropriate time. Would we say that if an airplane crashed?
If
terrorists took out an airplane, would we say, the next day, would we say, oh, now's not the time to talk about, you know, terrorists taking out an airplane? Of course,
right,
we
would. Right, and one of the arguments that came back was, well, if this had been a truck plowing into people, you wouldn't have said that we should have truck control, right? That was...
We would try to protect ourselves from trucks crashing into people. Absolutely. That's why if you go in Times Square now, there's all those big cement barricades.
Right.
100% we would. So, you know, yeah, it's not the person, it's not the gun, it's the person who, by the way, has the gun. You know, so there are laws that do work. We know that as we, you know, as you look around the country, the states with the strongest gun laws, you know, states like Hawaii and Massachusetts and New York and New Jersey and California have significantly lower gun violence than states like Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. I mean, it's very
clear.
And there's
this argument
so
that it's the culture, though, right? There's a difference in the culture of people in New York, say, or California versus the culture in Texas about guns.
Yeah, but as an example. Yeah, but at the same time, you could regulate the ability of criminals, domestic abusers, suspected terrorists, people who are dangerously mentally ill from getting firearms in Texas.
Right.
You could do that. You could do that in Louisiana just like you do it in Massachusetts. So if we had stronger federal gun laws on those individual things, we wouldn't have 33,000 people dying every year from gun violence. That number would be lower. You know, I don't know if it would be 10% lower or 50% lower, but it would definitely be lower.
So do you think that the Vegas shooting will change things? I mean, why should we assume that this shooting matters in a way that's different from the previous mass shootings, which have not changed?
Well, it's already changed one thing, and it might not seem like a very positive thing because it is just, you know, one device that you can add to a semi-automatic assault rifle. And that's that bump stock.
Yeah.
And the fact that Republican members of Congress, you know, have now said that, you know, they feel it's reasonable, you know, to regulate or prohibit those. That's a big deal to me.
Why?
Why? Because they are acknowledging that legislation matters. So a lot of these folks have been saying it doesn't matter. It will never matter.
So you feel like the whole argument that they've been making
crumbles. That's right. They have just turned that argument upside down. And that's a good thing. You know, maybe, you know, people have to be educated. Right. You know, I am perfectly fine with people changing their mind. I have changed my mind on stuff as well. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, I would love Senator Richard Shelby, right, to come around and say, hey, you know, we should pass, you know, background checks on all gun sales.
Why do you pick him?
Based on something he said the other day. He was asked a question and his only response is, I'm a Second Amendment guy. Nothing more sophisticated than that. That's why I pick him.
What do they? What do the members of in the Senate, the House, Democrats, Republicans? What do they say to you in private about this issue? That's maybe different from what you're hearing in public.
You know, they most of the Democrats now are on board with trying to do something. I mean, if you go back to 2009, that was not the case. I mean, you remember we had a Democratic president, Democratic House and Senate with majorities. How often did something in 2009 or 10, how often did a universal background check piece of legislation
come up? No, I mean, and part of this is that the issue has moved. And it, you know,
right.
I was struck
and I'd
by
like it. To think that we've helped move it, you know, in a direction that with the right people in Congress that we could get, you know, some pretty strong legislation passed that'll make communities safer. I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty clear to me. So we have moved Congress, you know, in the right direction. Now, you know, the people that are actually serving in Congress are a little bit different than they were in 2009. So we have some work to do there. And, you know, we got to get more Republicans on board with doing what, by the way, with what their constituents think are the right thing to do. I mean, large majorities of people believe that Congress should address this problem and can help.
I'm going to come back to the Democrats in a second, but what are the Republicans, what do they say to you when you call them up and say, hey, what about background checks? What about doing something here to have a solution?
You know, some of them will even ignore me, right? Some of my, who I think are my friends, like Eric Paulson as an example. I'm going to throw his name out there. You know, here's a guy from Minnesota who's a friend of mine, friend of Gabby's, Republican from Minnesota. He's a good guy. I like him a lot. I've known him for a long time. You know, he represents a district that, you know, that I feel he's very far to the right on this issue from his district and his constituents. So I sent him an email, you know, recently about the silencer, you know, bill, and he didn't respond to me. So you get that sometimes, you know, that, you know, don't necessarily have a good answer. A lot of times you'll get, you know, I spoke to, you know, Kevin McCarthy about it, and I got an answer from him that he'd probably give you. You know, I got the same, you know,
Which is what?
You know, that the laws don't work answer, which is not true. I mean, if the
well,
laws...
Well, that's the one that you feel like is...
I think if you're a member of Congress and you fundamentally believe laws don't work, you should quit. I mean, you really should. You're in the wrong job. And that goes for anything, including this issue. You know, and that's, you know, the answer that I got from him.
The Democrats, after the Pulse shooting, did the sit-in on the floor of the House last year. One of the things that struck me then was, as you're saying, like, almost every Democrat was there, maybe every Democrat was there in the House. But that was then, and they said they weren't going to give up the floor, and then they did, obviously. And there was not gun legislation that moved. There wasn't a sit-in this time. What do you think needs to happen to galvanize this among the Democrats in a way that might lead to some other result?
Or is it just that they need to win the majority? Yeah, they don't have the majority. Or they don't, you know, they can have the majority, or they can have some more Republicans. If they got some more Republicans, they don't need the majority. Right. I mean, it's just math, right? I'm an engineer. It's just math.
I'm a writer, so the math, I'm not really...
The other thing that could fix this big problem is the National Rifle Association could say, hey, we've changed our minds. You know, we used to support background checks 10 years ago for all gun sales. They could also recognize the fact that they don't come out against them currently at federally licensed firearms dealers. And are they really hurting anybody's Second Amendment rights by requiring somebody to get a background check before buying a gun at a gun show or over the internet?
It seems unlikely that the NRA is going to change its position.
It's unlikely, but you're asking what could happen.
Right.
to get this. Well, if that happened, you know, they've got a lot of influence on this issue. You know, you got to give those guys a lot of credit. You know, they have done a good job, you know, building up a lot of influence for themselves over, you know, the last 40 years. You know, so if they came out in favor of something like that, you'd see how many Republicans you think would flip on background checks.
It would probably happen pretty quickly. They didn't have to worry about the NRA coming after them, right?
Right.
Your theory about the NRA is that it's a sort of a business proposition, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's you know, hard to say for sure. They say, you know, they're about, you know, freedom and rights. You know, how about somebody's freedom to be able to go to a concert and not get murdered? You know, that's a freedom too.
But your point, right?
No, but yeah, I mean that they, you know, at this point, you know, they're trying to help an industry, you know, make money and sell more guns. And by the way,
sell more guns to fewer people is your theory, right?
Yeah, I mean, we used to, you know, the gun ownership in the United States used to be more than 50%. Now it's somewhere below 40%. You know, 2% of Americans, I think, own half the guns, something like that. So they're trying to sell more guns to less people. I get that. You know, I do. You know, and I think, you know, a guy having a job in Connecticut, you know, as a gunsmith's a good job. It's a high-paying job. You know, I think at the same time you could have a successful, strong American industry. But let's not get crazy about it to the point where we make it easy for criminals to buy firearms. It just doesn't make any sense.
It's and this price of freedom argument that you touched
it's
on.
It's not the price of freedom. I mean, you know, I don't buy that argument. I really don't. We have a Second Amendment in this country. You have a right to own a gun to protect yourself or to go hunting. You know, I'm a gun owner. If you're a felon, I don't think you have a right to go on the internet and secretly buy a weapon that you're going to use to hurt somebody else. That's not freedom in my book. I mean, that makes the next person to get, you know, shot by the former convict or the domestic abuser or the suspected terrorist. I mean, that's where their freedom is affected.
Another argument that comes out, and it came out of the White House in the wake of the shooting, was, well, to your point, like, the laws should change things. Well, Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, well, look, in Chicago, they have strong gun laws there, and Chicago is President Trump's favorite pinata when it comes to crime rates and everything else. And there are a lot of shootings there.
Poster child, right, for them. Right. I mean, it's a great place to point at. Chicago does have strong gun laws. The problem is that Indiana doesn't. And the county outside of Chicago, you know, people go into Chuck's Gun Store. You know, people know this. And another one that I forget the name of. And they buy firearms and they resell them, you know, without doing background checks. And they're basically doing something that's legal. It's hard for the ATF to enforce, you know, to do anything about this. Or people traffic guns from Indiana, where guns are very easy to buy because of the laws in Indiana. That's why we need strong federal legislation. You know, Washington, D.C. is another good example. You know, Washington, D.C. has, you know, relatively high amount of gun violence. Well, the guns don't come from Washington, D.C. Typically, they come from Virginia and South Carolina and Georgia. They get sent up I-95. You know, police officers call that the Iron Pipeline because it's where guns are trafficked, you know, along that highway. So, you know, I think it reinforces the fact that Congress should do their job. And then, you know, we could start to, you know, like I said, it, you know, it's not inevitable that we have to have tens of thousands of people dying each year. It's not normal. Other countries that are like ours do not have this problem.
So it looks like Congress is going to maybe pass bump stock legislation.
That would be great.
So and I'd love to see it problem as legislation. Solved, right?
Well, that small piece of the puzzle, that small problem is solved. How about let's not pursue silencers anymore? You know, we were doing that over the summer. How about concealed carry reciprocity? You know, why is one state going to have to be subject to, you know, the laws of another state that has very weak laws? You know, if you're in California as an example, you know, you've got to convince law enforcement that you've kind of got a reason why you want to be carrying a gun.
Yeah.
You know what you do in Florida? You apply to the Department of Agriculture online. You don't have to be in Florida to get a Florida concealed carry license. You don't ever have to visit Florida. You know, we could do it here before the end of this interview. You know, does that make sense? I mean, no training, you know, no background check, you know, nothing, right?
So, but the cynical gun, and I'm going to use the word gun control even though you don't use it, but the cynical gun control advocate would say the reason why Congress is moving on bump stocks is to deal with this small problem and not address the other things that you talk about. Do you buy into that?
Yeah, I think for some people it might be possible. I'm not as cynical as everybody. I like to see. I mean, it certainly had a big effect on what happened there.
Right.
You know, it is one thing you can point to that if he did not have that device, there would be less people killed and injured. So, I mean, I think it makes sense to address this. We should also probably address the fact that this guy was able to buy, I don't know, you know, dozens of AR-15s. I think he had some AK-47s as well, in a short period of time without the ATF being notified. If those were handguns, you know, under federal law, if you buy more than one handgun in 5 days, the ATF gets notified. What if the ATF was notified, hey, you have this guy, where's he from, Mesquite? You have this guy here in Mesquite that in the last couple of weeks just bought a dozen AR-15s. You know, why doesn't somebody go out and have a chat with them?
Right.
Right. So I mean, those things can make a difference.
That does seem like it would be a red flag.
So that would
somebody
be.
Starts
yeah. I think that would be a logical
weapons,
thing
right?
to do. Why don't we change the federal law to include, you know, semi-automatic long rifles along with handguns that if you start buying a lot of them in a short period of time, you know, the ATF gets notified. It's probably a good thing to do.
There was you use the word domestic terrorism or the phrase domestic terrorism to describe what happened in Vegas. And that is a phrase that gets tossed around a lot and debated now. Do we use it for this? Why is it, in your mind, domestic terrorism? He was not linked to, any group that we know of. Or...
Right. And I was pretty comfortable saying that on the day after this happened. And usually, you know, you think terrorism, well, it's got to be political or religious or some group. I'm convinced that when a guy, you know, goes to, you know, a window of a casino and tries to murder a massive number of people, he wasn't trying to kill 50 people. He was trying to kill 500 people. So you have an American citizen, in this case, trying to kill 500 people in a short period of time. He is sending a political message. And that message is, I can kill a lot of people very quickly because of our laws here in the United States, and you can't do anything about it.
Why isn't it I can kill a lot of people very quickly, and full stop, and not because of our laws? How do you get to because of our laws being
I mean,
part
look at
of that?
The arsenal that he amassed.
Yeah.
This guy, you
could
argue
like he,
against
maybe
this.
He just wanted to kill a lot of people for whatever reason,
yeah, but,
right?
But, you know, in any other country, you know, I think it would be a different argument. But here... You know, it is so obvious in the United States that you can buy an arsenal very quickly of very deadly weapons to murder a lot of people all at once. And show me another reason why this guy, you know, did this. You can't come up with it, right? Nobody knows. It's pretty clear to me he was sending a message.
Sending a message to what end, though?
I guess sending
that's,
a message,
right? Like that's where the question of terrorism right. gets into it. Like,
well,
what's
I,
the,
I right? think the end? I think the message he is sending is, hey, you know, I am capable and willing, and I'm going to go out and do this, and I'm going to kill a bunch of people all at once. And to me, you know, that is political here in the United States.
All right, so let's talk about politics a little bit. You were the reason you happened to be in Washington when the Vegas shooting happened was because you were going to campaign for Ralph Northam, the Democratic candidate for Virginia governor. Gabby's going to go and campaign for Phil Murphy, the candidate for New Jersey governor. You're expecting that you'll do more of that over the course of the next year and a half and beyond. Do you think gun rights has been a voting issue for people who are worried about them being taken away? for years, right? But it has not so far been much of a voting issue for people saying, yes, we need to have more restrictions and background checks. Are we at a point where it's changing yet? Or
It's changed already.
You think it's done?
In some, not completely, right? Yeah. But in, I mean, look at the New Hampshire Senate race in 2016.
Where Kelly Ayotte, who was not for background checks,
right,
lost.
And Maggie Hassan, yeah, who was, and who we supported, and we campaigned for, you know, she won.
Yeah.
This is New Hampshire, right?
And
this
not by a very tiny margin.
800 votes.
Right.
So, and we worked incredibly hard to help Governor Hassan win that election, largely because Kelly Ayotte voted against that background check bill. And, you know, I am convinced that if she would have voted for it with Pat Toomey, you know, Republican, his name being on the bill, she'd probably still be a U.S. senator. So those things have changed. I mean, yeah, we have a, you know, Pat Toomey ran on this issue, was reelected on this issue.
Might have been weaker, you think, running for reelection last year?
I don't know. I don't necessarily think so. I mean, he...
No, had he...
I think not, he would have been weaker.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think he's stronger because of this.
Yeah.
You know, we wound up in, you know, he wound up in a situation where people went after him early on over this issue and said he was not, you know, he was not protecting you and your communities from gun violence. And I've had this conversation with him, and he, you know, I mean, he was the guy on the bill.
Right.
Right. He was the Republican was on the bill, the Manchin Toomey bill. He's the guy, you know, who stepped out there, you know, as a leader on this. You know, sometimes hard to be the leader.
Yeah.
He was the leader on this, you know, and then he's getting attacked on this issue. And then we went out and we, you know, Gabby, you know what, you know, supported him, you know, went straight to camera saying, hey, you know, Pat Toomey is the leader on this issue. You know, make no mistake. He is for, you know, helping to make your community safer from gun violence.
I remember standing at the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia when Mike Bloomberg was addressing it, and there was a Democrat, it was a Democratic Convention, there were a lot of Democrats, but there was one particular Democrat who looked up at him on the stage and said, yeah, this is all great, but he's also backing Pat Toomey, so if he really wants to do something on gun control, he could get rid of Pat Toomey, and then we could actually move on it. But that undercuts the idea.
We need Republicans. Right? This should be a bipartisan. This should be an issue that people work on in a bipartisan fashion. Shouldn't be polarized and politicized to the extent that it is.
And if a Republican can't get support from you,
from somebody like
and
us,
Bloomberg or wherever, yeah, when not, they do the kinds of things that you're asking for, then they're never going to do it, right?
Well, I don't know that. I would hope they would do it just because it's the right thing to do.
I mean,
do.
If they're still going to get attacked,
there'll be less
right?
of them yeah. that will do it. Right, if we're not gonna, you know, stick up for them when they're doing the right thing, and when by the way, it's also the same thing that they're, you know, the people that they represent want, you know, whether it's domestic violence legislation or background check legislation. I mean, the community wants these positive reforms.
So, let's stay on politics for just one more moment. When you were at the Capitol last week, with Gabby for that event. Towards the end of it, one of the reporters said to you, so are you, what about you running yourself? Do you ever think about it? And you said something like, I think about it every time someone asks me.
Right.
Do you think about it in between when people ask you?
No.
There are rumors about governor, senator?
To be honest, I really only think about it when somebody asks me about it. And then, you know, because I feel like I owe them an answer.
Right.
Right. So then I'll think
about it. And you think
about
it enough to say no?
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't say, I would never say never. I think elected office, you know, running for office, public service. Hey, I was a public servant, you know, my entire career, right? And 25 years in the Navy and at NASA. I feel that Gabby and I and our organization, Americans for Responsible Solutions, has been incredibly effective on this issue, moving the country in the right direction on this. I don't know if I could, you know, necessarily be, you know, as effective on this on the inside. I mean, we built a great team of people, and you know, running for office, it's a big decision. I would never say never, but you know, Gabby was the politician in our family. I mean, if something happened to me, was she going to go fly in space?
Probably not. I mean, she might have wanted to, right? I want to come to space in a second, but Mark Kelly 2018, that's off the table. Mark Kelly somewhere down the road maybe is.
You know, we don't know. We don't know.
We don't know about 2018?
Let me just say I'm not planning anything.
Because there are people who think maybe you'd run for governor next year.
I mean, I hear that. I hear that all the time. People have all kinds of ideas.
What do you say to that?
Well, I also hear from people, you know, people that are close to me, they say, hey, you know, I heard that you are running for this thing. I've got it on, like, authority. I'm like, where do you hear this stuff?
A reporter that I was talking to told me that when I said I was coming to do this with
you. I hear this stuff all the time.
It's good that we're both hearing the same rumors. But you're the one who's a good source on this.
I'm a good source. I have no plans to run for office at this point.
All right, so you are the first astronaut that we have had on the podcast. So let's talk about space just for a moment. What do you think, what's your assessment of where we are in terms of exploration of space and what President Trump has been trying to do to talk more about space? We had Obama talked a little bit about it, and it was Bush was, we were going to go to Mars. It doesn't seem like we're going to be in Mars.
It's never high on any president's agenda, except for President Kennedy.
Right.
You know,
and something happened with that.
Right. And, you know, so we went to the moon in the 1960s and early 70s.
Not because it was easy, but because it was hard.
Because it was hard. You know, and doing the hard things, I think those are great messages. You know, I think only here in the United States that we can make science fiction reality. I really believe that. I mean, you look at how many times we have landed stuff on the planet Mars. A lot. In excess of a dozen. You know how many times another country has landed something on planet Mars? I mean, if you double it, it would be the same number, and that's zero.
Right.
Nobody else has ever been successfully able to do that. There's really something about us here in the United States, about our ability to dream big, to latch on to these crazy ideas and then turn them into reality. And, you know, our space program is a perfect example of that.
We need
to continue to do it.
Is it a problem that we're not as invested in it as we used to be? There was a lot of technological development that came out of it, a lot of inspiration.
I mean, look at SpaceX for a second, right? Yeah. You know, the fact that they now take the first stage of their rocket and they land it on a barge or on a pad next to the launch pad. I mean, that's science fiction. You know, several years ago, if you would have, when Elon Musk was talking about doing this, you know, I'd be the first to stand up and say, that's not going to work. You know, I understand the rocket equation.
I think you're required to, as a NASA employee, right, to say, leave it to the professionals, right?
No, I'm not required. I mean, when he started doing that, I don't think I was even at NASA anymore. It just, you know, to me, it just didn't seem like it was going to work. Well, he made it work.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what we're really good at here in the United States. And I think we're on a good trajectory. I'd like to see NASA have more funding because I think that every dollar we spend at NASA, you know, our economy gets more than that back. You know, we create industries. You know, the fact that we can have a computer in our phone, you know, it's not because, you know, Bill Gates or, you know, Steve Jobs decided that, you know, he wanted the miniaturized computers so we could do this. It's because, you know, we had to miniaturize computers and electronics in order to get people to the surface of the moon
right.
and then back.
So if we were doing that for Mars, wouldn't we be...
Oh, absolutely.
Having bigger leaps than we
absolutely.
Are?
Absolutely. 100%. That's why I think it's worthwhile to try to go to Mars. And I'd love, you know, the government to fund something with the realistic amount of money because I think it's a great gift to our economy. You have to have vision to do that. You have to be thinking long term to do that. I think often the people we elect to office are just, you know, they're running around putting out fires. You know, they're not thinking long term. What is the United States going to be like 50 and 100 years from now? And if you make smart investments early, the return we can get out of this is incredible. I mean, we could stay the leaders in aerospace and the leaders in tech and computer technology. You know, if we come up with plans and then we, you know, execute those plans over a long period of time.
You're not a huge Donald Trump fan, but do you think that he has it right on space and the emphasis that he's put on it so far?
Well, the Space Council met yesterday. It's the first time in 20 years, I think, that group of people met. I have not seen the transcript from the meeting. I'm going to find it here in the next couple of days and see what they actually said. I think it's a good first step to, you know, to focus on it. Absolutely. I don't know what the administration's plan is. One of the problems we have is it seems always with every new president, there's a change in direction of our space program. The problem with that is these programs take a long time. You know, people always ask me, hey, do you think we should go to the moon or Mars? It's like, I don't care. We just need to continue to do what we set out to do because we can be successful at this.
Well,
it's always like
the probe that was at Saturn was launched in 98, right?
Right.
It just burned up, right? And Voyager that is just maybe leaving the solar system was launched in 77, I think.
Yeah. I mean,
right?
So
like these are long-term projects.
But at least in that case, once you get it launched, it's going and you don't have to give up on it. What often happens is we give up on it before the thing ever gets launched.
And at least get it off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, you often see, like, you know, we're on some program and then the White House cancels it or Congress cancels it or NASA sometimes even cancels these things. You know, we need consistency, we need leadership, and we need vision, you know, long-term vision, and we can, you know, we really can do anything, I think.
All right. Mark Kelly, thanks for taking the time.
You're welcome.